Hello and welcome back to the Procrastination Podcast. I hope you're doing well. It's been quite a while since the last episode. I've really not been consistent with my podcast episodes. I'm so sorry. I say that like at the beginning of every episode, like I'm not consistent and I'm back and I'm ready. But yeah, honestly, it's just, it's so hard trying to like keep up with everything. It really is. And especially during the summer, I was just kind of chilling and doing my own thing and just enjoying a break because I really, really needed one. I was just exhausted through the summer. I'd been working so much and I was like, you know what? I'm just not going to do anything. I'm not going to do YouTube. I'm not going to do any social media stuff. I don't care. I don't give two shits about the algorithm because what can happen sometimes with some social media platforms, Instagram in particular, is really bad for this, is if you stop posting and then you start posting again, it's like you're starting with a brand new page. And the Instagram algorithm hates it if you take a break. And yeah, it's just an absolute mess. Honestly, I really don't like Instagram. Like, I like my community that's on Instagram, but I really don't like Instagram as a platform. I think it's just a really shit platform. Like the amount of times I've reported scammers who are using my profile picture or using my content to scam people. And like, I'll report these profiles and Instagram's just like, we see no violation. And it's like, you do realize that these people are scamming people, like this is not me. So yeah, oh, they're just an awful platform, they really are. Like, I think out of all the social media platforms, the one that seems to be the best, like helping their creators, let's say, seems to be YouTube. But I think it depends with YouTube. I've heard some very, very mixed stories about people dealing with YouTube, so they're definitely not the best. But I mean, I bet they get like so much shit, like people reporting absolute shit, and they just deal with all these reports that aren't even genuine reports. I think actually on YouTube, if you report someone and it's not a violation, I'm talking like as a creator, if I report someone for like, let's say, stealing my videos, but it's not actually my video, like I can lose my account. Like I get punished. That's how strict it is. That's how like strict they're trying to be on YouTube by stopping people from filing like fake reports and stuff like that to get people's account banned. So yeah, they're really trying, while Instagram's just like, what? Someone's an imposter. They've stolen all your content and they're scamming people with your face. Oh, let's just ignore that. Yeah, they really are awful. Oh, and don't get me started on Facebook. I think Facebook is just the anus of the internet. I used to think it was TikTok, but it's definitely Facebook. Anyway, yeah, I am here. I'm present with you right now. And yeah, I want to answer some of your questions about my trip to Japan, which I went on a few months ago now. I was there at the end of August until the beginning of September. We went during the hottest season, and that's because my boyfriend's starting a degree, a master's degree, and he needed to be back in time to start his master's degree. So yeah, before you say to me, Emma, why did you go in the summer? It's the hottest time of the year. But I know, we knew that, but it's the only time we could go. So yeah, it was like now or never. And despite the weather being so hot, so humid, just awful weather, I had the best time. I loved it. I loved so much about Japan, everything. I loved everything about Japan. So yeah, I asked you guys any questions that you have about my trip, because I know a lot of people were like, you know, just asking me questions while I was there, and I thought, actually it might be really good to compile all these questions together and try and answer them in almost like a rapid fire sort of way, but some of them I might need to expand on a little bit. But yeah, also for the past few weeks, I've kind of been traveling a little bit as well. Don't worry, nowhere super fancy or exotic. I went to Scotland for six days to go see a friend there because she's going back to China and she was doing her PhD at Glasgow University. So it was my first time visiting Edinburgh, Glasgow, and a little city called Stirling, which is kind of between Glasgow and Edinburgh. And yeah, we ended up going there and walked around the university at Glasgow, and it was really nice. It was like very Harry Potter-esque. And then I came back for like a week and a half, and then I was jetting off again back to Denmark, which I've been to a few times. And I really liked Denmark. That sounded very Danish then. I really like Denmark, and one of my closest friends is from there, which is why I went, and I haven't seen her for years. Same with the friend who was in Scotland as well. I haven't seen her for years as well. So it was really nice because I've kind of been trapped in countries for the past 3 years. So during COVID, for example, I was trapped in the UK for 2 years because of lockdown. And then when I came to Spain, because I was an illegal immigrant, I had to, wait for my papers and visa and stuff. So I couldn't leave the country, which was really annoying because of Brexit. I was stuck in Spain for a year, pretty much like a full year. And finally I'm able to go, like I'm able to travel around, I can leave the country, I've got no worries about being deported random times in the middle of the night. I'm really happy that I can like go off and see friends and things again now. So I've been doing that, but I don't think I'll be doing any more traveling this year. I feel a bit traveled out, like I went to the UK at the start of the year and then went to Scotland a few weeks ago, went to Denmark, went to Japan. It's like, oh, I just want to stay home now. Just want to stay home until Christmas and just chill. Just chill out here with Freya, my dog, who I missed. Oh my God, I missed her so much when I was away. I always say like, I miss my dog more than my boyfriend. But I think it's because I can talk to my boyfriend. You know, like you can message, you can call. But like your dog doesn't know if you're ever going to come back. And that thought always makes me feel so sad. So yes. Anyway, let's start answering some of your questions. So I just asked you guys, oh my God, can I read my own question? What did I say? What would you like to know about Japan and my trip to Japan? And I have quite a few questions here. So brace yourself, grab yourself a cup of tea. Actually, I grabbed myself a cup of tea. I'm going to have a little sip. Let's do some tea drinking ASMR. First question is from Julie D. English. Hello, Julie D. Or is it Julida? Oh, maybe it's Julida? Julide. I'm so sorry for mispronouncing your name, but hello, Julide. Why did you close that woman's shoes? Now, I found this funny. What they mean is, in one of my pictures, I covered my feet. So I think what they mean by, why did you close that woman's shoes? I think maybe they didn't realize, you know, I'm so sorry for mispronouncing your name. I think you're talking about me in the picture. Like when you say that woman, it's me. And when you say close that woman's shoes, I think you mean hide that woman's shoes. And that's just because of like an ongoing joke I've had for a long time. If you're a new follower, then you know, you won't know this joke, but I've always joked about like hiding my feet because I've always said like, oh, you guys are weirdos and you'll take pictures of my feet and things like that. So it's just like an ongoing joke because there's like this weird kind of fetish that some people have where they really, really like women's feet. So yeah, when I first started my Instagram, this was like before I even started my YouTube channel, I remember I used to get men asking me for pictures of my feet. And it was just so weird. It's like, why do you want my feet? My feet are like the most disgusting, crusty feet. Because I've got climber's feet, right? Like, I go climbing with these tiny, stinky little climbing shoes. Like, I do not have nice feet, so. People will be so disappointed if they saw my feet expecting, like, delicate little feet. No, no, no. I've got climber's feet, mate. Climber's feet. So yeah, I wanted to explain that joke because it was quite funny. So the next one is from Fernando. What things you can appreciate... Okay, let's phrase this as a question. What things can you appreciate, or what things do you appreciate is maybe better. What things do you appreciate about Japan or the Japanese? I really appreciate the cleanliness of the country. Spanish people, don't take offense because you know this is true, but Spain is very dirty, especially in big cities. If you walk around Barcelona, like, there's dog shit on the streets. It stinks. Like, I think it's the sewerage, like the drains. Like, it does stink sometimes in Barcelona. And yeah, people just throw rubbish on the ground. Like, it's just dirty, you know. I walk around and people just throw things on the ground. And even when you're driving, people are throwing rubbish out the window. And yeah, it's just really gross in some areas where they're especially not being cleaned like every day. But like in big cities in particular, they tend to be quite dirty. And yeah, and smelly. And I think it's because of the drains. While in Japan, it was just so clean. Everything was so clean. People really respected the areas where they were in. Like, you know, one of the observations that my boyfriend made is there's no graffiti. There's no like stupid little graffiti, like people writing on things or scratching things. You know, I feel like in the UK and Spain, you just can't have anything nice because people will destroy it. And in Japan, it's just not like that. Like, they really have like a respect for their surroundings. And it's just really nice and almost refreshing to see someone have so much respect for their own country and their own surroundings. So yeah, that was really nice to see. And the friendly nature of people, I find that people in the UK, especially with customer service, like people who work in customer service, they're very friendly, they're very open. And I find like English people, if you walk past them on the street, they'll smile at you, they'll say good morning. They're really nice in general. I mean, you can't say every English person's nice, because I promise you, I've met more English assholes than I have anyone from like any other country before. That's because I grew up in England, of course. I'm gonna meet more assholes from England because I'm from there. But like, I find that in Spain, it's like, especially people who work in customer service, they just don't give a shit about being nice and being friendly. And they really don't give two shits about customer service and being polite, being nice. Like, you go into a supermarket and they just throw your shopping at you. And there are times when I walk up, I'm like, hola. And they don't even say hi to me. And it's and sometimes they don't even say the price to me. And I'm just like, are you serious? Like, you don't even have the decency just to say the price. Just say hi, say the price, and I will leave. And we never have to see each other again. Like, that is it. But it really does ruin my day. I won't say ruins my day, that's quite an exaggeration, but it ruins my mood for a short period of time when I come across people that are like that. And you can't just say like, oh, well, it's just one or two people. No, it's actually like a very big cultural thing. Like, a lot of people do it here, and it's everywhere. Happened to us in the south, happened to us in the north, happened to us in Madrid. Like, it's happened to us everywhere. My boyfriend says the same as well. It's one of the things that he really misses about England, I think. I think you said that. That he really misses, like, people kind of asking, you know, in supermarkets. I mean, fun fact, I used to work in a supermarket back when I was, like, 18, 19 years old.
and I was I was working on the tills, I was working on the checkouts. So I would talk to customers and put their shopping through, help them with the shopping, like their packing and stuff like that. And then there were times where I was also cleaning, so I would have to sometimes talk to customers if they just caught me as I was cleaning something as well. But my main job was a checkout assistant. And our training, I still remember to this very day, we had something called HOT training. And the H stood for hello. The O stood for offer. So offer to help with their packing. And the T was, what was the T? Maybe it was talk or something like that. So basically, when a customer came to the till, you had to greet them. You know, hi there, how are you? How's your day? Would you like some help with your packing? And they'd just be like, no, thank you. And then you would have to ask them about their day. And I used to really hate it because I used to be quite shy. And yeah, I used to really hate it because it's like, I don't care about this person's day and this person doesn't care about me asking about their day. This person doesn't care about me. They've just come in for their shopping. And it just felt very forced. And I always felt like that was too much. So I always used to find this kind of sweet spot where, like, if they wanted to start talking to me, then I would. But otherwise, I would just kind of sense, like, this person doesn't want to talk to me. I'm not going to force it. Also, I'd be doing sometimes, like, really long shifts from, like, 5 a.m. in the morning all the way until 10 p.m. at night, because I would be doing like double shifts and different jobs and things like that in supermarket. Like, I was working like a bitch. I would literally get home at like 10:30 at night and just eat and then go to bed and then wake up the next morning at like 4 a.m. cycle back to the supermarket and do it all over again. And I did that just to, you know, save some money. Then I could go travel in Spain, like move to Spain to study there. So in the end, it was worth it. So that's the main thing. But I remember it was like part of our training to be really, really nice to customers. So if you ever go to the UK, you'll find that sales workers, they tend to be really friendly, really nice. And it's because they're told to be, because you're supposed to be nice to the customer. So yeah, really appreciated that. I really missed that. Just how nice and friendly people were. But yeah, there's a lot of things that I appreciate about the Japanese culture, the Japanese mentality. But those are two things that are like off the top of my head. Those are two things I really appreciate. So really good question, Fernando. Thank you. So next person, Sedagati Ali has message saying, what was a major feature of the Japanese culture? What was prominent? So it's hard to say what was like a major feature of the Japanese culture, because you've got the culture as in like the way that the people are, the way the people interact with you as a foreigner as well, because you can go to some countries and they're like, oh yeah, they're the friendliest people, but they're maybe not so friendly to foreigners. I know that that's happened to some countries, to some friends of mine in some countries. I can't remember which country, so I can't say like, oh yeah, it was blah 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 country and then people can defend their country. I really don't remember. But yeah, in terms of major features of Japanese culture, I would just say the politeness, the respect, the idea of giving space to people, respecting boundaries and respecting people's space, just respect, really, just respect of everyone. And you find that when you're there as well, you just want to be part of that, like you respect other people as well. And it's just really nice to see. That's one thing I noticed, is foreigners who were there traveling, I suppose they were traveling as well, like us, like visiting as tourists, they were all very respectful as well, very respectful. While we were there, there was like this viral video that was going around at the time, and it was of this guy who who went on a women's only carriage. So in Japan, with some of the trains, they are women's only carriages, but they're only operating in certain hours. So I think it's just like rush hour or something. So between like something o'clock and something o'clock, only women can go in that carriage. But the rest of the time, men, women, anyone can go in the in this particular carriage. And yeah, it was during like that hour where it was women only. And this man, I can't remember where he was from. Was he Australian? I think. I can't remember. But yeah, he was like, oh yeah, let's go inside the women's carriage. Let's see if it's all safe for men. Yeah, let's go inside. And then he went inside. And of course, he's like filming it on his mobile phone, showing these women's faces who are thinking like, this is a safe space. This is women only. And yet you've got this foreigner, this dickhead, just like going in and filming their faces, being like, yep, no men here, no men here, all safe, all clear. And it's like, why would you do that? Seriously. So yeah, I mean, you do get some dickheads like that, but you get dickheads everywhere. So yeah, you can't generalize. But that's a major feature, is the politeness and respect for everyone, and respect for space, respect for boundaries, respect in the sense that they don't want to hurt your feelings in any way, and just really nice, really polite. That's like the one thing that really, really sticks out to me. It's like when my Japanese teacher, actually, if he's listening to this, then hello, sensei. I promise I'm studying. like he's very, very indirect when he says certain things. And I love that about the Japanese. It's so English in a way, where they don't say exactly what they want to say, which might irritate some people from certain cultures where it's typical to be more direct. Like in Spanish culture, it's typical to be more direct, while in English culture, it's typical to be more indirect. But I tell you, the Japanese take it like a whole new level. And it's so funny. It really is. It's funny because they are on the other side of the world, and their language is so different and their culture is so different, yet it's so similar to the English way. It really is. So, you know, I'll say something like, oh yeah, I'm really bad at vocabulary. And my teacher, instead of saying like, yeah, yeah, you're really bad, he'll say something like, yes, you need to study more, you know? So he's not explicitly saying like, Emma, your vocabulary is shit, but he is saying like, yeah, you should study. So yeah, thank you very much for that question. Next one, Samsung. What is absolutely to visit? So to rephrase this question, what is something you should absolutely visit? Really, it depends what you like. It depends whether you want to see something like weird, then you go to something in Tokyo, or whether you want to see something more traditional. If that's the case, then I really recommend going to a place called Nara. I'm saying that a very English way, but it's like Nara. Spell N-A-R-A, N-A-R-A, Nara, Nara. And there it's like a small town. It's still quite touristic because a lot of people go from Kyoto or Osaka for like just a day. We went for an afternoon because we didn't have enough time. But it was plenty of time actually just going for an afternoon. And that's where they have like the bowing deer, and they have these gorgeous temples and things like that. It's just really nice. So that's what I recommend just from my visit. But for sure, if you talk to someone else who's been to like different areas, they can probably recommend something way better. That's just from my trip, what I highly recommend you do. So if you end up visiting Osaka or Kyoto, then I definitely recommend you try and get a day trip to Nara squeezed in there as well. It was really, really nice. Next question. I really like this one. Achifei. I hope that's how your name is pronounced. Someone said, the reason why. Why did you go to Japan? Because I've always wanted to. And I always thought that it was somewhere I never could go to, because it's such a distant land, if that makes sense. Like, it's so far away. It's so distant. It's like a place that you only see in movies and reading books and see other people going to, but you never think oh, I'm going to go there. You never think that. So when I went, it was so surreal. It really was. So yeah, I went because I've been, I don't know, I've just always been interested in Japan and learning Japanese as well. I'm currently learning Japanese. And it's just something I've always been interested in because it's so different and it's so far and it's just like another world. And it's intriguing to me to see some, to see a place that's just so different to what I'm used to. As a European, like, you'll go, for example, from England to France, and it's like, ah, oh, these look quite similar. Or you'll go from, like, Norway, Sweden, Denmark, and you're like, hmm, these are very similar. Or you go to somewhere like, I don't know, Italy and Spain and Greece, and you're like, hmm, these are quite similar. So after a while of traveling around Europe, things look very samey. And you can get quite bored easily in Europe, I find. Like, you may disagree with me and you may be like, no, Europe's so different. But when you've been to quite a few different countries in Europe, like I have, brag. I make it sound like I've traveled like all around Europe. I definitely haven't. But, you know, a lot of the countries I've been to, I do find that they're very samey. Like, I remember I was once walking around, holy shit, where was it? I was walking around somewhere. Well, maybe it was Italy. And I was like, oh, it looks... It was Portugal. I was walking through Lisbon. And as I was walking around Lisbon, I was like, honestly, I feel like I could be in Spain right now. Like, I could close my eyes. You could drop me in the middle of Lisbon. And I would think, yeah, I'm in Spain right now. Like, I would guess I was in Spain. Because it's so similar. But same in Italy. I felt the same when I was there as well. So yeah, things start to look very samey after a while. And going somewhere like just a completely different continent, you feel those differences. But even when I went to South America, I went to Brazil, Argentina, and Uruguay because my boyfriend's family's from Uruguay. So shout out to any Uruguayans. It didn't seem too... What's the word? Like, it didn't seem too different from what you would see in Europe. Does that make sense? While if you go to somewhere like Japan or South Korea, you really feel the difference. You feel the difference in the architecture. You see the difference in the people and how they act. And language as well. Like, you don't hear that much Japanese or South Korean used in Europe, you know? So if you go over to, let's say, Argentina or Uruguay, it's like, oh yeah, well, I hear Spanish a lot because, I mean, I live in Spain, right? Like, oh, there's a lot of Spanish people. So you're kind of used to hearing Spanish. Same with Brazilians. Like, you hear a lot of Brazilian Portuguese, a lot of Portuguese, like Portugal Portuguese. So it's not too... unfamiliar is what I want to say. I felt very like at home when I was in South America. But yeah, when I went to Japan and South Korea, it was like, oh, this feels so different. So it was like a bit of a culture shock, but in a really nice way. So yeah, that's why I ended up going, because I just never thought I would go and I always wanted to go. I just thought it was so different to what I'm used to. Anastasia, I'd like to know about their public transport. Their public transport and how many people know English there. Okay, I'll start with the first question. Public transport, it is very, very good in Japan. Very good. Trains are always on time, leave on time, super clean, really, I would say, quite easy to maneuver as well. So everything's very clear where you're going, and even if you use like Google Maps, it will tell you what platform you need to be on. Like, it's very, very good. Very, very good. Very, very, very well organized is what I wanted to say. And how many people know English there? Anastasia, seriously, not many people know English very well there. Oh God, it's got really dark. I need to turn on my light because I'm sitting in the dark right now. But yeah, not many people know English. And I don't know if it's just the case of them not knowing English or if they're just too shy to speak it. But I do feel like it's like they genuinely just don't know how to speak it. So really don't rely on English. I spoke a lot of Japanese while I was there. Brag again. I spoke a lot of Japanese while I was there. I would say, 95% of the interactions I had, they were in Japanese. There was only one time when I just couldn't speak Japanese. I just didn't have the words for it. I wanted to know where to park my bike and I didn't know how to say it. So what I recommend you do, Anastasia, and for anyone else who plans to go and they don't speak Japanese, is download the Japanese language pack for like on Google Translate, the app Google Translate, download that and download the Japanese pack so you can translate things without relying on internet connections. Because even if you go there and you get a SIM card, and you get data and stuff, sometimes in certain areas, like especially in restaurants and things, if they're underground restaurants, you don't get signal in there. And you don't really want to get caught out. Like you don't want to get caught in a situation where you're like, oh shit, yeah, I've got a translator, but I won't fucking translate because there's no internet connection. So download that and it's free. It's completely free. You just need to make sure you've got space on your phone. So yeah, good luck with that, Anastasia. Next one. Yubia Perse. Okay. Thank you very much for your question. Any cultural shocks, misconceptions that you think people might have about those countries? Misconceptions. I don't know. I'm not really sure what misconceptions people really have about the Japanese and about Japan as a country. I know that the politeness really bugged my boyfriend because he was like, they're just being overly polite. But for me, as a Brit, seeing people actually being fucking nice and being polite, it was like, this is really nice. This is really refreshing. You know, you go into a supermarket and they talk to you, they're really nice, they actually address you, they say hi, and then you come back to Spain and they're like, you say hola, and they don't even look you in the eye. I tell you one thing that drives me mad here in Spain when I'm in like Mercadona or something, like one of the supermarkets here is called Mercadona. And they sometimes don't even hand me the receipt, they just throw the receipt at me. And I'm just like, what the actual fuck is going on through your mind? Seriously, it's so rude. It really is. So when I was in Japan, it was like, oh, this is so nice. But any culture shocks? I wouldn't say I had any culture shocks, to be honest, because I was quite well researched. Like the whole trip was very well researched. And I would say I had a few culture shocks when I was in South Korea. So I was in South Korea for about 4 days. And one of the things was the spitting. You don't really see that much in Europe. I mean, I could be wrong. Like, Europeans, please tell me if, like, you get loads of people spitting in your country. But I feel in Europe, people don't really spit. But in South Korea, I saw a lot of people spitting and like full on, like full on gauzing and just, ugh, yeah. And you can hear people, especially old men, and they're just behind you. Oh, it's gross. I didn't like that. I really didn't like the spitting, but, I mean, it's not, I think a lot of people don't like spitting, so I don't think I'm the only one there. But yeah, I saw that a lot in South Korea. Just like, a man in like a fucking business suit. Just like, oh, dude, please, no. Didn't see that in Japan, only in South Korea. But yeah. So the next question. Yeah, good question as well. Culture shock. Santi Tempia. How did you manage the jet lag? Oof, I didn't. I really struggled. I really, really struggled. And I also struggled when I got back as well, like when I got back to Spain. What I recommend you do is you really force yourself not to nap, and you really, really try to like stay awake and adjust your body clock and go to bed when it's nighttime there. So we arrived when it was like 8:30 in the morning, 9 a.m. or something. So it was like, okay, yeah, great, rest and recharge, let's go. But for our bodies, it was like 2 a.m. So we were kind of walking around and, you know, feeling tired because we've just been on this flight. But it's because our bodies were 8 hours behind or 7 hours behind, can't remember. And I think it was seven hours behind. And yeah, some days it was really tough. I feel like I didn't feel it much on the first day. It was more like on the second and third day. I remember when we went to Nara, like on the second day, we went to Nara and yeah, I really struggled. when I look back at the pictures, I'm like, God, I look so tired, because I really was. I was really tired. So yeah, try and just take it slow, like the first day or two. We lost a day. I mentioned this in the other podcast episode, but we lost a day because our flight, we ended up missing the connecting flight. I talked about why we ended up missing that connecting flight in the first episode. So like in the first part, so go and listen to that if you're bothered. But yeah, we kind of lost a day to adjust ourselves a little bit. And I really felt like we needed that extra day. I really wish we had that extra day, but we didn't. So it meant that we kind of had to rush around a little bit more to make sure we saw everything, which made us even more tired. But yeah, I would say the hardest thing for me was staying asleep at night, because I would be going to sleep at like, I don't know, like 10, 30, 11 p.m. Japanese time, but my body still thinks it's like 4 or 5 p.m., you know? It's still like, yeah, yeah, let's go, ready for the afternoon. But I'm like trying to get to sleep. So yeah, it's a bit of a pain, but you'll adjust. Next question. Kecharito mene. Ooh, I'd like to ask the obvious. Did you eat sushi? I'm sorry if you're vegetarian. I am vegetarian. Being vegetarian in Japan is the worst. It really is. If you're vegan, then fuck, I don't know what you eat. Apples? Bananas? From the konbini? Because I mean, you can't even eat bread. A lot of the time there's milk in the bread. So yeah, I'm vegetarian, which means I don't eat meat and I don't eat fish. I also don't eat bone broth. Broth, I was like spitting then. I don't eat bone broth or meat broth. So like the juice. I don't eat the juice of the meat or the bones. And don't eat gelatin. But I do eat eggs and vegetables and stuff, of course. But yeah, so I found it very hard, because you would order a vegetarian ramen, for example, which is like a bowl of noodles and soup, broth, and it would say vegetarian, but then you would ask, what is the broth made of? And they're like, oh yeah, it's made of pork. It's like, well, it's not fucking vegetarian then, is it? Jesus Christ. So yeah, you know, there were a lot of cases like that. I would say if you go to Japan as a vegetarian, just go with the flow. Like, go with what you're comfortable with. Because there are going to be times where you are going to be eating meat without realizing. Like, I ended up ordering some ramen and it came with these big pieces of pork. And I really don't like pork. I think pork tastes disgusting. I never liked pork before because I always said that it tastes like pig, which sounds so weird to say because of course it is pig. But for me, the taste of pork, it tastes like the smell of a farm. Like, I really don't like the taste of pork. It just tastes awful to me. I think maybe it's just my taste buds, but yeah, I've never liked it. So having it as a vegetarian just slapped on top of my ramen, I was like, ugh, no, I'm gonna vomit. Actually, another fun fact, I from time to time, I maybe have this like once a year, but I'll have a dream about eating meat. And normally that meat is pork. And in my dream, I'm like gagging and vomiting, I'm like as I'm like eating this pork. It's so weird how you like dream and you're dreaming like a vegetarian dream. Like even your vegetarian self is like rejecting meat. It's so weird. But to answer your question, did you eat sushi? I did. So what I did is I just made peace with the fact that I'm going to eat fish. And I mean, I mentioned this to some friends as well when I said like, oh yeah, I had to eat fish. And one friend was like, you have to eat fish. It's like, well, I didn't enjoy it. I'll tell you that. Like when I was eating the fish, it was like, yeah, I'm eating it, but I'm eating it because I've got no fucking choice. I'm eating it because there's literally nothing else on the menu. I can't even order like just anything, a salad, you know, like I can't order anything else. It's literally fish or meat. So yeah, there were times when I had to order fish. And I'll be honest, I didn't have to eat it that much, really, like it was okay. So yeah, I didn't enjoy it. As soon as I got back into Spain, I was straight back vegetarian again. Haven't touched fish since I got back. I didn't enjoy eating fish when I was there. I didn't miss eating fish. It was like, yeah, it tastes nice, but I don't like it. You know, I don't like eating a dead animal. So it kind of ruined it for me a little bit, did that. But there are quite a few vegan and vegetarian places I saw. I know that there's a place that does okonomiyaki, which is a typical dish from Osaka. And they have a vegan place in Osaka that does vegan okonomiyaki. So if you're a vegan or vegetarian, you could try that. Next question. So this is from, oh, for some reason it's like not showing the name properly. Oh, Mehir Dad 6681. Why most of the English teachers live in Japan? Okay, so why do most of the English teachers live in Japan? I don't know. You'll have to ask them. No idea. Maybe it's just because they want to travel there. I don't know. There's also something called the JET program there, where it's, is it called like Japanese English teachers or something like that? I can't remember what it stands for, but there's a really common program where you can become an English teaching assistant. And yeah, you apply for that and they pay you, they pay for your accommodation. I think sometimes they pay for your flights. And yeah, a lot of people go and do that and then they end up staying as teachers. Maybe they fall in love with a Japanese person. They then get married, they stay, they have a family, and that's how they end up going there. But I wouldn't say that most English teachers go to Japan. I would just say a lot of English teachers go to Japan. But yeah, it's also a good job to do if you don't speak Japanese, because if you want to live and work in Japan, you need to have a really high level, like a sort of C1 level of Japanese before they'll even consider you for like a job in a restaurant as a waiter or a waitress or something. So for people who don't speak C1 level advanced Japanese, being an English teacher is their ticket in. It's an easy job for them to have and not worry about Japanese. So next question. Oh, this one's about vegetarians and vegans. We kind of touched on that. Okay, so Vijay Chamanta has said, what are some things that are not normal to you, but they are to them? I'm not too sure. I think a Japanese person would have to answer this question and would maybe have to have like a kind of cultural exchange, like what's normal in my country? Because I find that, let me tell you what's normal is work culture in Japan. So in Japan, it's seen as like you live to work, right? So you will be the first one in the office and the last one out the office. And a lot of Japanese people do overtime. So they'll end up like staying and working longer, usually unpaid, because they kind of see it as like dedication to their job and respect to their job and dedication to their boss and company and everything. And it's like a big expectation that people stay late. You know, you're supposed to finish, let's say, 4 o'clock, but still, people will be in the office working until 5, 6, 7 p.m. because no one wants to be the first one to leave the office. And that's very normal and very toxic. And a lot of Japanese friends of mine have said, yeah, they really don't like that. But because it's a societal expectation, it's a big phrase, they feel pressurized to do that. Like, you don't want to be that weirdo that leaves early. Yeah, they want to be the one that stays and is not the odd one out. Yeah, they don't want to be the weird one that leaves early. They want to show their respect and be included, let's say. So it's very normal to work to death in Japan, not so much in England at all. If anything, I think people in England don't give two shits about their jobs. They're like, what, it's 5 o'clock? Right, I'm leaving, out the door. Next question, cultural differences. We talked about those quite a bit before. Sorry, I saved like loads of questions, but some of them may be like very similar, so I'm like skipping questions. It's because I've already answered it. Next one. I'd like to know about their modals. I think you mean modes of transport, just from the rest of your question, I'm guessing. So I'd like to know more about their modes of transport. For example, how do they behave on public transport? This is from Antonella. Really good question. So in Japan, on public transport, people are quite silent. You aren't supposed to be on the phone. You aren't supposed to talk. And people, they do stop their conversations and they do sit there in silence as they're traveling. And then as soon as they're off the train, they start, like, they continue their conversation again. I remember a Japanese friend of mine, she said, it's a real pain because if you've got, like, you know, some really good gossip, especially like work gossip, and you're telling your friend and then you get on the train and then you're like, shit, I can't tell my friend the work gossip. So you're like waiting until you both get off the train to like continue talking about the work gossip. It's just so funny. But yeah, in Spain, it's like the opposite. People are like shouting, they're on the phone. In England, it's very similar to Spain, but I would say people don't shouts as much as they do in Spain. They're quite loud. So yeah, that's quite a difference. Yeah, they're very quiet, very, very quiet on the trains. Next one from Clara. Clara also, the writing is so tiny on my phone. Oh my God. From Clara Olsakova. Okay. Clara, hi! It's my student. Anything positive that got stuck in your mind and is worth sharing? A lot of things. For me, the most positive thing was just the attitude of the people. How helpful and positive and kind people were in Japan. And also in South Korea. Like, I really have to mention South Korea and how polite people are there as well. Apart from the spitting. People are so polite there and so helpful. When we were a bit lost in South Korea, people would kind of come up to us and be like, are you okay? Are you lost? And I do find that people's English, you know, someone else mentioned before about the English level in Japan. I would say that the general English level in South Korea was a lot better than in Japan. I felt like I could talk to anyone in South Korea and they knew just a little bit of English. But when I was in Japan, if I spoke to, say, a police officer in English, he didn't understand. Now, don't worry, don't mistake me here as one of these people that just expects people to speak English, right? I really don't. I'm in their country. I don't expect people to speak English to me. But I'm just kind of reporting my findings there. As a tourist visiting that country, I definitely find that people's English was much higher. And people people spoke very well, I think, in South Korea, like the people who were helping us. And if I found that if someone couldn't help us in both countries, in Japan and South Korea, if they couldn't help us, then they would find someone else who could help us. Like they would actually like run off and bring another person who could speak English. So that was really nice, really, really nice to find in both countries. So yeah, that's something that that was quite interesting. But yeah, something positive is just the politeness and how helpful everyone was. Everyone was so nice. Another question from Clara. Your experiences and feelings as a Japanese learner, how much did you speak and understand? In general, just like walking around and reading signs, I understood maybe like 10% of what I was reading. In restaurants with menus, I understood a little bit more because I'd actually been practicing that. In restaurants, talking to people, in shops, talking to the sales assistants in supermarkets, konbinis and stuff. It was all in Japanese and I understood everything. I remember like my first day when we got there, we just arrived and we were like walking to the hotel and I saw a konbini and I was like, oh, I need to go inside. Oh my God. I was so excited. Like, I want to cry right now thinking about it because I was so excited to go into a konbini. A konbini is a Japanese convenience store. So you got convenience store, convenience, konbini. Konbini, right? You see how they've like adapted the word and like Japanese-fied the word. Yeah, so they call it konbini in Japanese. And I was so excited. But then when I got to the cashier, she was like, blah, 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 blah. And she had a mask on and there was like a plastic sheet in front of her. And I was like, oh, I don't understand anything. Wakarimasen. And yeah, it wasn't until like maybe a few seconds later I understood what she said. Like she was asking, do you want a bag? And I was like, daijoubu desu, daijoubu. Like it's okay. Yeah, it was just nice. Yeah, once my brain realized like I'm in Japan, I need to speak Japanese now. So yeah, little things like that, little interactions I understood. Sorry, I'm going to have another sip of my tea. Because my throat gets so dry and so sore when I talk a lot. Which is every day. So yeah, I understood quite a bit. There were times when I had to like translate things, like on the menus, there were some things in kanji, which are the Japanese symbols. The Chinese symbols that they use in Japanese. And I was like, oh my God, how do I read this? But it was fine, really. Like I understood the majority of what was going on. If I didn't, I just whipped out Google Translate and just translated there and just showed them it. And I knew it wasn't an accurate translation, but it was enough for them to help, enough for them to understand and help me. So yeah, that's like my biggest tip is to download the Japanese pack on Google Translate. So nice experience, a nice question as well. Next question, Yosef. How did you plan it? Oof, TikTok. Lots of blogs and websites, YouTube, talking to friends who had been, and talking to Japanese friends, talking to my Japanese teacher. And that was it. That's how I planned it. And I also made sure to keep in mind why I'm going to Japan. What do I want to see in Japan? Because there are some people who go to Japan and they just want to see the weird shit. You know, they want to see like the robots, the sexy stuff. They want to see that, right? They want to see the nerdy stuff, the anime, manga stuff. And there are like some otaku trips. So otaku is like a Japanese nerd sort of thing, like a nerd for... a nerd, I guess. But it's like someone who's a big nerd for like Japanese things. And yeah, they do like these otaku trips. So there are people who go and do that. It really depends what you like. I'm not an otaku. Like I'm not into that. So for me, I wanted to go and just get a feel for the country and experience different sides to it. I wanted to experience something quiet and peaceful like Nara. I wanted to experience a little seaside town like Enoshima. I wanted to go and see giant Buddhas. I went to Kamakura. I wanted to experience the craziness of a big city like Tokyo. I wanted all of those sorts of things. And that's what I planned for. So, yeah. And was it too pricey? Yeah, it was really fucking expensive, Yosef. I'm not even going to tell you how much we spent. Jesus. Anyway, next question. Ben, what advice would you give to someone who's planning to go to both countries? Think about what you want to see. What do you want to experience in those countries? And research the hell out of it. And create an itinerary as well, I would say. But also leave room for some flexibility, because there may be some days where things are closed or where it's raining and you can't go and do that hike you'd planned. Or maybe you miss your connecting flight and you lose out on a day. You know, things like that. So be somewhat flexible. But my advice is watch a lot of YouTube videos, listen to a lot of podcasts of people who travel there. There are some really good travel groups on Facebook, especially if you're a woman. There are like female travel groups, so you can look for advice in there, people's itineraries. Yeah, like I wrote my whole itinerary out on Notion, like a kind of day-to-day plan. I wrote out, so the way that I planned my trip was I found things in those areas that interested me. And then I looked at them on a Google map and I put them on the Google map. I don't know how to explain it. On Google Maps, you can create your own map and you can put like your own little boop, 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 like your own little stickers on the map of where things are. And that's what I did. So I created like my own Japanese map, my own like Japan and South Korea map. And I just put all the things I wanted to see, let's say, for example, in Tokyo, because Tokyo is fucking huge, right? So in Tokyo, I just put down all the things I wanted to see. And then afterwards, I looked at the map and I would notice like, okay, so there's like five things in this area that I want to do. So that will be day one. Oh, there's a lot of things in this area, in this particular area that we can do. That'll be day two. Over here, there are a lot of things that I want to do in that area as well. That'll be day three. So that's how I planned for things. But there were some days where we ended up kind of getting through 2 days of itinerary in one, because maybe we were just super quick looking at some things, or we kind of got there and it's like, oh shit, this isn't what I expected. So we ended up leaving. Maybe there were like too many people, or we thought that something would take longer, but it didn't. So yeah, little things like that. That's how we, well, I say we, my boyfriend didn't plan shit. I planned everything. But yeah, that's how I went about planning it. And I spent months researching. I spent months researching everything for this trip, and learning Japanese for 2 years as well. So yeah, a lot of things there. Okay, how many more questions do I have? Oh, I have quite a lot more actually. Okay, no, some of the questions are quite similar, so we should be okay. Right, should be able to get through them all. Ryan has asked, or is it Raihan. I'm really not doing well with pronouncing names today, but I promise you it's not my fault. It's because the writing is so small on my screen. Like the name is like super tiny in the corner. So Raihan, I would like to know what South Korea, I would like to know about South Korean food. What do you like about Korean food? So I tried this thing. Hold on, let me Google the name. Was it called Bim Bim? Oops. I don't want to type that on my work document. I think it's called bibimbap. Yeah. Okay, bibimbap. Let me find how they describe it. So it's like a rice dish. Okay, bibimbap. It's called. I'm reading the phonetic transcription. Bibimbap is mixed rice. So basically you have rice at the bottom and usually you have some kind of meat with it, like a ground beef or something. And then you have like an egg, you have some vegetables, and then you mix it all together and it's in like a spicy sauce. Maybe there are different sauces, but yeah, it's like a spicy pepper sauce, red pepper sauce kind of thing, or red chili sauce. And oh, I really liked that. And it was quite easy to find vegetarian versions of that. So yes, I really, really liked that. What else? I quite liked, you know, a lot of the spicy food that they have there. I'm trying to think what else we had. Oh, what do we have? Oh, we ended up going to a night market. And I got the, oh, hold on. What was it called? Shit. Let me just search Korean food. Or maybe I should put South Korean food because it might end up mixing it with North Korea. Kimchi. Tried kimchi, but I've tried kimchi before. It's nice. Oh my God, what's it called? It's like a spicy red sauce. And there are these little rice cakes. Oh, here it is. Tteokbokki. Oh, how do you pronounce this? Tteokbokki? How is this pronounced? Tteokbokki. Ah, there it is. Tteokbokki. Yeah. My brain was just like, it cannot understand like all the K's written in this word. So my brain's like, there are too many K's. I can't pronounce this. Yeah. Tteokbokki. Oh, I can't say it. Tteokbokki. Tteokbokki. I always had this dream to go to South Korea and eat tteokbokki. And I realized that dream. And it was, oh, so good. Went to the night market. And it was like 10 minutes away from our hotel. And it was so delicious, so nice. I was so happy. But the problem with South Korean food is it's very, very meat heavy. So a lot of chicken, a lot of beef. So I was like, oh, there's not much I can eat here. So there were a lot of things I couldn't try. I just didn't want to. And I know some people are like, oh, but you're missing out by not eating these things. But I don't feel I am. I really don't feel I am missing out on all these amazing dishes because eating meat genuinely makes me feel disgusting. I don't like it. So I wouldn't be able to enjoy that dish. I would rather find a vegetarian alternative or just not eat it, honestly. So, a lot of things. Yeah, it's got here the bibimbap. Yeah, I really liked that. I had a lot of that. And the tteokbokki. Oh, I can't say tteokbokki. Why can't I say that word? It's so annoying. So yeah, I remember having that as well. But the food in South Korea is quite spicy. If you don't like spicy food, don't go to South Korea. Or at least don't eat the food. Okay, I'm going to do one final question because we're already at an hour and I might have to break this into two. So to what extent... Oh, sorry, this is by... Oh, can't speak now. Sorry, I get really tired. This is from Christoph. To what extent were you able to talk with Japanese people in Japanese? We've kind of had this question a little bit already, but I was able to talk in very, very, very basic situations like going to a restaurant, ordering, asking for directions, getting tickets for things. Going into the shops, supermarkets. Yeah, I could do very, very basic things in Japanese, but I couldn't do anything too advanced. So I managed to get by just fine. But yeah, anyway, let me see. Let's just get through the question because I don't want people to think like, oh no, she didn't answer my question. Let's do rapid fire. So next one here from Joao. Joao? Is that how it's pronounced? Which country did you like the most? Japan. Are there any differences between them? Yes, many differences. I think I've touched on quite a few differences. But yeah, I found Japan to be very safe, very clean. You could leave your bag and no one would touch it. While in South Korea, I felt... I didn't feel as safe. It was a little bit dirtier. It wasn't dirty, but it was just a bit dirtier. I felt as well that there was like more pollution when I was in Seoul. Like I could kind of like feel it on my lungs because I have asthma. I could feel it on my lungs more when I was in Seoul than when I was in Tokyo. But that could also just be the weather. I don't know, because it was a lot rainier and more humid in Seoul compared to in Tokyo. So it could have been that rather than pollution. But yeah. Some other differences. Food is very different. It's very spicy. The South Koreans, they don't fuck about when it comes to spice. Like, you want spice, you eat South Korean food. And I love spice as well. English people in general tend to deal with spice quite well. So I really loved it. But my boyfriend suffered. He really hated spicy food. While Japanese food, I would say it's, yeah, they don't really do spice in the same way. Another thing is the chopsticks are different. So in South Korea, the chopsticks are metal. They're metal chopsticks. And they're very slippy when you're trying to like eat noodles or something. Like the noodles just slide right through. While in Japan, they tend to be like thicker a little bit and made of wood. So, oh, made of bamboo. I can't remember if they're wood or bamboo. Anyway, they're not metal. and I find the Japanese ones a lot easier to use than the Korean ones. But yeah, those are some little differences. But both countries were very friendly, very nice. Just really nice. Like, I just had the nicest time there, the nicest experience. Let's see. Next question. With Kappa, Kappaku. Where did you stay? So in Japan, I stayed in Osaka, Kyoto, and Tokyo. And we visited Osaka, Nara, Kyoto, Tokyo, Enoshima, and Kamakura. So we visited those places. But we only stayed in three places. And what's your favorite scenery in Japan? And also in South Korea, we stayed in Seoul. And we only stayed in Seoul. We didn't travel outside because we just didn't have time. And what is your most favorite scenery in Japan or Korea? I can't comment so much on South Korea because I only visited Seoul. So yeah, I don't want to say much on that. But Japan, my favorite scenery, I would say is when we went to Nara. Yeah, when we went to Nara and then we went like through the park and we saw the temples and the trees and everything. That was really nice. That was my favorite. And as well, I really liked when we went to Enoshima. Don't confuse it with Hiroshima, by the way, because when I tell people, oh yeah, I went to Enoshima, they're like, oh, but that's not near Tokyo. I'm like, yes, it is. You're thinking of Hiroshima in the south. but yeah, Enoshima is in the north. It's more north. It's not in the north. It's more northern and just south of Tokyo. And yeah, it's really nice there. Just a friend of mine lives there. And yeah, she took me like to Enoshima Island. And it was just really beautiful with like all the old architecture. And if you go right to the very top, you can see Mount Fuji. You can see the ocean. And yeah, it was just really, really nice. God, I'm so tired now. Oh, God, what time is it? 6:30. Jesus Christ. Because it's getting dark so early, so my brain's like, time for bed. Okay, next question. So, Avo, this person called Avo, hello. Are Korean and Japanese similar languages? Nope, not similar. The grammar's quite similar, but the languages, like, if you study Japanese, you can't read Korean. And if you study Korean, you can't read Japanese. They are completely different alphabets and ways of writing. But the grammar is quite similar, apparently. Could you understand Korean while you were there? No. No, I couldn't understand anything. So yeah, and I don't speak any Korean, so it was a bit tricky sometimes maneuvering around Seoul, but it was fine. People spoke English really well there. Shija, did you make any friends? No, I didn't, but I did go see a friend while I was there. Mozak, cultural differences between both countries and the UK would be very interesting. Mozak, I think we kind of touched on a lot of cultural differences already, so I won't go into it again, but nothing more's coming to mind, really. Nothing more's coming to mind. Is that right? Yeah, nothing else is coming to mind. That sounds more natural. So I'm really tired now. Quality English. Have you experienced culture shock? Oh, we talked about that. Not really. Just the spitting in South Korea. Like, Abra. What's the difference between McDonald's in Japan and South Korea in terms of tasty food? I didn't go to any McDonald's while I was there. No. And, that's it. That was the last question. Oh, no. There's one more. Oh, yep. There's one more by Luna. Have you tried matcha in Japan? I did. Actually, you know what? I really highly recommend this place. It was a place in Kyoto. I think it's called Matcha House. Let me find the place for you because I highly recommend this place. Yes. So this is a place called Matcha House in Kyoto. And it's quite central. Yeah, Matcha House in Kyoto. And they just sell like ice cream, matcha tiramisu, matcha lattes, like everything matcha. And it was so good. Very high quality. Really nice. Oh my God. Get the matcha tiramisu. Send me a message and thank me. It was the best. It really was. I took some pictures of it because I wanted to kind of copy it myself. Like I wanted to try and make it here in Spain because I make tiramisus from time to time. I've made a lemon tiramisu before. I've made like normal tiramisus with like coffee and what's it called? Yeah, just coffee. And what's the alcohol they use? Because I tend to make it with coffee and amaretto. But what's it made with? It's not made with amaretto usually. What alcohol is used in tiramisu? Oh my God, I bet Italian's like screaming at me right now. Is it wine or rum? Is it rum? Is that usually what it uses? I thought it was... Oh, it says here... Although dark rum is the most commonly used alcohol in tiramisu, you can use coffee liqueur, amaretto, or Marsala wine. I don't know what Marsala wine is. But I'm not a big wine drinker, so if you tell me like, oh, this is a blah, 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 blanc from blah, 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 I'm like, that means nothing to me. But yeah, normally I make it with amaretto and it's very, very nice. So yeah, I wanted to try and copy that and try and do like a tiramisu here in Spain with matcha. So I'd like to do that. I should do like a little mini one and test it out and just make one for myself. But anyway, that's it. Those are all the questions. Managed to get through them all. Sorry, they were a little bit kind of quick fire towards the end, but I think a lot of questions were quite similar to ones I'd already done. And yeah, I absolutely loved my trip. It was the best. I can't even say it was one of the best trips. It genuinely was the best trip, the best holiday I've ever had. I loved everything about my time in Japan. I loved everything about my time in South Korea. Everything was great. Everything was wonderful. Everything was amazing. I have nothing bad to say about both countries. The people are just so nice, so helpful, so friendly. All I must say is just be aware that people don't speak much English. Just get Google Translate on your phone. Just make sure that you download the Korean and the Japanese language packs on Google Translate. And that's it. And you'll be fine. And you can go around and actually with the Google Translate app, it sounds like this is an ad for the Google Translate app. It's really not. It's completely free. And I've not been paid a penny by Google. There's also an option where you can, like, if you open the app, you'll see like a little camera icon. Hold on, let me open the app and let's see if I can like find it. Okay, yeah. So when you open the Google Translate app, down in the bottom right-hand corner, you'll see camera. If you click on camera or tap on camera, and then you choose the language. So let's say, you choose Japanese. And you choose it to translate to English, and then you point the camera over a menu or over some writing, it will translate it in like real time. And if the writing's not very clear or something like that, you can just take a picture and then it will translate it from the picture. It's really, really good. So completely free. Google Translate, just, yeah, it saved us in some situations. So I definitely recommend that. But that's it for this podcast episode. Thank you so much for listening. I would really like to, maybe not in November, but December onwards, maybe for like 2024, I'd really like to get some guests onto the podcast. I'd really like to start going through people's emails as well, because I opened up a separate like email address, so people who listen to the podcast can send me emails there, any questions, any suggestions on topics they want me to talk about, you can send them there. And I need to go through them because I've not checked that email folder in a while. I don't even know if I remember the password to get in, so I'd like to do that. It would be great to get back into podcasting because you guys really love it. I get more DMs on Instagram about my podcast than I do about YouTube. And people really like it. You guys really like it. So thank you so much for listening. And I'll see you in the next podcast episode, or you will hear me in the next podcast episode. Bye bye.